Glad you're all with us this afternoon. TJ Trout, BB at the controls. We got Gabe in the newsroom, and we got Carlisle in the traffic bunker. And we have, along with, I don't know how to put this, Pavlos's posse.
Yes, or my Bostonian friends.
Wow.
The game was a little tough yesterday for the Red Sox, but hopefully they'll pull it out.
Well, you know, what do you do with cheaters?
That's football, TJ.
Cheaters versus cheaters, you know?
Fighting words.
Well said for somebody from Cleveland, right?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm, yeah, look at me. I like. Anyway, who'd you bring with you?
We have Chris Hennessy, professor emeritus with Babson College and Putnam Funds, and he's going to talk about Biden's new tax proposals. Again, we're all cringing. Some of the tax proposals that were proposed were pretty scary, but our friend Joe Manchin has come to the rescue, and Christine Sinema. So hopefully we're not going to have...
That was a fairly politically incendiary thing you just...
You know, that was spoken from a Democrat, and I'm promoting two Democrats, one from Arizona and one from West Virginia. So as a Democrat, I am very pleased with those two Democrats. And the other guest speaker today will be Gene Goldman, a friend of mine. He is Chief Investment Officer for Cetera Advisor Networks, our firm, and he's our Chief Strategist. He's been right on target this year on what's happening to the market, and a lot of people have been moving their money to advisory because of what has happened after COVID, and so he'll talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to talk to both of you guys about that to start off with, and then we can go into specifics in a little bit. But I mean, we've had a hell of a 2 years, right? I mean, it's, you know, I hate using the word unprecedented, but I guess you could use it in this case. You know, nobody saw this coming. I mean, we can see the horizon, right? But we're not there yet. How important, we have a labor shortage right now. We have a supply chain shortage. How important is it getting people back to work? Gene, how important is it?
It is extremely important to get people back to work. So let's just take the numbers. First of all, we have 10 million jobs out there.
Yeah.
We have 8 million people looking for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented, your
right.
phrase, unprecedented. They have more jobs than people looking for jobs.
Right.
What the concern is that, you know, labor shortage, supply chain issues is creating some inflation concerns. And you're seeing inflation move. We've seen wage growth move up dramatically. The Fed, I thought it was interesting. They came out with their notes from the September 22nd meeting. We're getting the weeds here. I apologize.
No, that's okay.
But they were saying all the great things about the economy's rolling, but then they were hedging themselves every single time. Whenever the Fed hedges themselves, why is that important? Because that means they want to be accommodative, but they can't be accommodative. They can't keep rates low because that's not helping supply chain issues. Supply chain issues are going to be with us for a long time, for through 2022. I live in California. Please don't hold that against me.
And too late.
off the coast of Long Beach, we have 100 ships waiting there. To put that in perspective, a few years ago, on average, we had about 4 or 5 ships waiting online to be unloaded.
Right.
To put this in perspective, and something we can all talk about is wine. Think about this. The average container can hold about 20,000 bottles of wine.
Yeah.
If you take a huge container ship, that's 200 million bottles of wine. Think about that. 100 of those waiting on the side of Long Beach to get to land.
That's about a month's supply for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, Chris told me that the cost for the containers have gone up too, right, Chris?
And not only that, but you can't get a cup of coffee because all the coffee shops are closed because they can't get help.
They can't keep people to help. Well, it's interesting you bring up the container ships again. I just got this. As of Monday, there were approximately 200,000 shipping containers that were backed up off the coast of L.A. 200,000.
200,000.
And TJ, the cost, it used to be about $5,000, but according to what Chris told me, it's now about, what'd you say, it was about $17,400 to ship one of those containers. So that's a huge inflation. I mean, you're talking triple digit.
I know, you just said inflation, and this is obviously what you're talking about, driving inflation.
Well, yeah, TJ, and I filled my wife's car up the other day, SUV.
Yeah.
$82 used to be
crazy.
60-ish.
I know. Well, I always said people start to pay attention to gas prices when they get to about $3 out here, about $3 a gallon. Then people really start to pay attention.
But what's interesting about gas prices, right now, we're about 20 cents below the national average in 2012.
Yeah.
The height.
Uh-huh.
About 20 cents below that. It's, you know, it's inflationary.
Right. So do you see, please, for all this good and holy, do you see an end to this? I mean, do you see this? How far down the road do either of you see this kind of working its way out? Or is this going to be with us for a while?
If I was the Fed, I would say it's transitory. I don't really believe it. I think the Fed made a mistake, and we've been pounding the table to all of our advisors, like Pavlovich, saying, listen, the Fed made a mistake. They continue to say it's transitory, but there's so much evidence that they're wrong. You had Bostic come out today and say we should get things cleared out by 2022. But again, there's so much going on. And as rates are low, as we have an accommodative Fed policy,
sure,
it's going to create more and more and more demand.
Talking about getting this stuff off the ships, should the government be more involved? Now, I mean by more involved, do we need the government to step in and start unloading these ships and these containers? Is that a wise thing to do, in your opinion?
Well, generally, Chris, TG, I don't like the government involved in private enterprise.
Right.
So that's the issue I have with that.
Yeah.
Gene may have an opinion, too. But
I mean, if we can't get anybody to unload these ships, I mean, what do we do? Do we have any other recourse to get this stuff into stores and get it shipped?
But we also got to think about, you know, the entitlements that we've given to people from COVID. TG, a lot of people were paid more for sitting at home than going to work. So if some of these people didn't have those paychecks coming in, they might say, gosh, maybe I should get off my couch. I've got one child that I need to get her off my couch and get to work too. So, you know, I got to take care of my own house before I speak about somebody else's house.
Yep. And this is not just a U.S. problem. It's a global problem.
Right.
You look at China. China, for example, you know, they're doing rolling blackouts because of coal prices have jumped dramatically. They're also doing rolling blackouts for electricity because the Winter Olympics are in February. These are big issues. I read about this one company, this bag manufacturer. They were operating 6 days a week, 10 hours a day. Now they're doing 2 days a week at 8 hours because, again, they just can't produce stuff.
All right. To either of you, I don't even know who to ask this one. Okay, we just talked about that, getting people off the couch. Getting them back to work, it has to be done. Obviously, it has to be done. It's for the greater good. It has to be done. So,
and I can sit down and watch TV, so then I'll have some room to watch TV if I get her off the couch.
For crying out loud, man! But what kind does there have to be a new agreement now between labor and job creators? I mean, does a new consensus need to be formed? A new equilibrium? And how does that need to be done? And how does it get done?
Wow, it's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of this is post-COVID. We're coming out of COVID at TJ. So it begs the question, and Pavlos made this point earlier. I mean, you're paying people to stay home.
Right.
Labor Day, the $600, the Fed thing ended, but still we have this labor shortage.
Right.
And there's a lot of benefits that were passed that aren't necessarily unemployment. There are other benefits that people are getting, and they're kind of on the edge, and they're thinking, well, I'm just not going to go back to work.
Right.
I'm going to hang out.
Yeah,
and I definitely agree with Chris. But I think also in addition to that, you think about the fact that, workers are pushing back. How many strikes have we seen? LA strikes. You've got, Procter & Gamble. All these companies are striking.
John Deere.
That was it, 14,000 people. Yeah. So they're pushing. So they're creating wages to move higher, too. And wages are moving higher. You look at low-end workers, that sort of the production workers. It's up in the last year. It's up 4.8% year-over-year wage growth.
But this is kind of a will. I mean, this sounds like a proletarian thing to say. But the will of the people. The people have to want to go back to work, and not only want, they have to need to go back to work.
You got to put food on the table.
Well, yeah, sure.
So,
but how do you get to that point? We're at a really strange place right now.
Well, I was in Greece, and they had a socialist president, Tsipras, and they changed over to center right Mitsotakis. Guess what? They got a little tired of Greece. Of the economic malaise, and they said, you know what, we need to get off our duffs and get going. They told the EU, we're opening up this summer, we're inviting Americans, and the tourist people were, working. And so, definitely, I mean, basically, the structure of the economy has to be free enterprise.
Right, indeed. Okay, we got to take a break. I'm going to come back. I want to talk a little bit about the infrastructure plan, what you think of that. I want to talk a little bit about debt. And taxes. How's that?
Sounds great.
All right, perfect. All right, traffic, 10 seconds. Hold on. All right, thanks for listening. Having a rousing economic discussion. Pavlos Panagopoulos, Cetera Advisor Networks. Also, Gene Goldman over here, Chief Investment Officer for Cetera. Chris Hennessy, Putnam Business Advisory Group. And your resume is far too long to say it all on the air. So I'm.
He's a lawyer. We actually have a lawyer in the room. So he's also a lawyer. So if we get in trouble, we have a lawyer with us.
Thank God.
All right, Chris, this is directed to you. The infrastructure bill. Do you expect it to get passed? How are they going to pass it? How are they going to pay for it?
There are actually two infrastructure bills.
Right. There are.
There's a traditional infrastructure bill, a little over a trillion, and then there's the big one, $3.5 trillion, which they're trying to get through reconciliation.
Right.
They're both sitting in the House. Pelosi couldn't call a vote because she didn't have the votes to pass them. I do expect them to pass. I don't think it's $3.5 trillion. I think it's more like 1.8 to 2, maybe.
Okay.
Because we've got Joe Manchin from West Virginia. Right. We've got Kristen Sinema from Arizona. But those are senators. There are a lot of progressive House members, Democratic.
Sure.
And they're pushing back also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there are moderates. So I think it'll go, you know, they're saying Halloween, but that's only week away or
yeah, sure.
That way.
Right.
It's not going to be Halloween. I think it's more like Thanksgiving. And part of it is, frankly, they want to get it done so they can go home for Thanksgiving.
Of course they do. Yeah. So this is their prime motivation, so they can sit down and eat a whole lot and watch football.
So I think it will get done. I think there will be tax increases.
Yeah.
Maybe scale back a little because they don't have to do $3.5 trillion.
Right.
It's paid for with a combination of tax increases. But even with the tax increases, and by the way, there's some tax decreases like the child tax credit.
Yeah.
But even with all that, they're still short. So that means borrowing.
Yeah. Let me ask you about that. I mean, government spends money all the time. Dems and Republicans are notorious, both parties, for putting us into debt where we are. And if you look at the statistics, actually the GOP has done it more than the Dems have.
Correct.
But they're both guilty of it. Is there, in your opinion, good spending, good government spending? I mean, if you're going to spend money on something, is there a good way to do it and a bad way to do it? And I'm almost not even talking about debt. I'm talking about something that might generate more, you know, more income and more jobs.
Well, I'll tell you an example. I think the traditional infrastructure bill is good spending because when I drive around the roads in Boston, there's so many potholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Well, I think that is good spending.
Yeah, okay.
I also think that some of the other stuff is a lot about green in the bigger $3.5 trillion bill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about what's called human infrastructure. So free community college for 2 years, even if you're a billionaire.
Sure.
I don't think that's needed the way they're presenting it.
I think they said they're going to cut that. Didn't they just say they were going to cut that out?
They probably will put some income restrictions on that too, Jay. And there are some other things, pre-K, paid family leave, all sorts of things, which will never come out of the law once they get in the law.
Right.
And you've got to cost all that out.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the debt, and look at the debt in this country. And Gene, I'm sure, can comment on that, too.
Yeah, and I think there's good spending. So think about last year when all of a sudden the recession hit.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden we lost about 23 million jobs.
Sure.
Those people needed support, and the government spent a ton of money to help bail us out. Think about this. The recession we had last year, the two-month recession, shortest in record, was the first time we saw personal income actually rise during a recession. It makes sense because we had to help people in the time of crisis.
Sure.
That's good spending.
All right. Let me ask quickly. We got about a minute. Was that our recession, or is there another recession that possibly could be imminent?
Well, I'm not the investment expert, Gene is, but my view is if the Fed continues the way they're doing,
yeah, sure,
they keep pushing it down the road.
Yeah, okay, okay.
I don't see a recession. I think that consumer demand is so strong right now.
Mm-hmm.
So our consumer net worth, we are in a stronger position than we were just a few years ago.
Okay.
We have high savings rates, and we're still buying things, so I'm not worried about that.
Right.
The supply issues, we have to watch carefully.
Okay.
Supply is careful.
We got to take a break. We've got to do a news break. On the other side of the news break, I want to ask you guys about inflation.
And let's talk about stagflation.
Yes.
Does that have to do with, like, male deer?
Or a party, right?
Yeah, whatever. All right, gentlemen, thanks for being in here, by the way. Traffic coming up in 10 seconds. Hold on. All right, we are back. Thanks for listening. TJ Trout, along with Pablo Sapanagopoulos from Cetera Advisor Networks. We got Gene Goldman in here, also Chief Investment Officer for Cetera, and Chris Hennessy from the Putnam Business Advisory Group. Good conversation. This is good stuff. Interesting. This is very interesting. So let's start with inflation, where we are right now. So obviously the supply chain shortages, everything else is going up, right? How dangerous is this? And how long do you guys expect this to continue?
I think So I think it's pretty dangerous. I mean, I think the supply chain, we were talking about this offline, about just the number of ships, number of issues. I think it's very dangerous because think about what type of monetary policy we have. Usually the Fed lowers rates to stimulate the economy, and this could actually crimp growth, but they can't lower rates now. Hmm. We're already at zero.
It's already low, right?
And this will worsen the problem. So I don't know, and with the holiday season coming up, it's going to be bad. And you get the Fed governors coming out talking about the issues that they're seeing, and they're starting to get a little leery about this.
All right, what are we at right now? I mean, yearly, what are we looking at?
Inflation, CPI is around 3.6, 3.7. Just, you know, it's going to hover around 3.5, 3.6.
Okay, because, I mean, obviously back in the Carter years,
yep.
You know, when you're up to 15-16% inflation, right. And things like that. I mean, you don't see it.
I remember it well.
You and me, right.
1981.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember it very well. You know, and
81, my mom had a mortgage for 15.9%.
I know. And then I remember getting a mortgage, you know, sometime in the mid-late 80s. I had 9.5 and I was thrilled.
But, so, TJ, this is different than that, in that this is financial repression. Not depression, but repression. Where
Cheech Marin or something?
Yeah,
or Tommy Chong.
Tommy Chong. Basically, you know, it's hard on people, you know, hardworking people. This financial repression, which, you know, incentivizes people that borrow money and penalizes savers. We have not seen that in the history of the United States.
I'm going to bottom line this for me, if you can do. How high is this, do you think this is going to go?
I think inflation is going to definitely keep rising, keep moving higher, but then it should settle down around, say, 3 to 3.25. I think that's a good point. And remember, the Fed's always been trying to target 2%. So inflation is going to be much higher than we have been seeing for a long time.
But conversely, taxes. What do you see for taxes? What do you see for taxes in 2022, for that matter?
So
what's going to happen?
So Biden had said $400,000 or under, you're fine.
Yeah.
And kind of turned out that way in the House Ways and Means proposal. So they're saying, okay, your top rate's going to go from 37% to 39.6. Got to be over 400,000 single, 450 married. That's actually taxable in TJ. But the capital gains rate's interesting.
Yeah, okay.
So the capital gains rate impacts the markets. So
sure.
That rate right now, most people are paying 15%, some 20,
right,
plus the 3.8 surtax. That's going to go up to 25 plus the 3.8, 28.8. It's never been higher in this country than 28%. But what's interesting is it's retroactive to transactions on or after September 13th.
So if somebody's like, for instance, somebody's held on to a house for years and years and years, and obviously the value of that house is appreciated, and it's time to sell for whatever reason, they're going to get screwed.
They could be because, they got a $500,000 exclusion, but boy, a lot of these homes are going for $1.5, $2, $3 million.
All right, explain that to me again, the $500,000 exclusion. So what's that mean?
So every married taxpayer that sells a primary home can exclude the first $500,000 of gain. Any gain over that would be taxed at the capital gains.
Okay, so it's a couple?
So it'd be a couple, single person, $250,000.
So you get $500,000 off the top. You don't have to worry about that.
Right. And it could be just once in their lifetime they're over those numbers I mentioned of $400,000 and $450,000.
Right.
Because they sold a house.
Sure.
Or they sold a second home.
Sure.
And that'll push them over.
I got to sit down now for a second.
Yes.
But no, that is worrisome. It's worrisome. You're right, because we're not talking about the super rich. We're talking about average people.
That's
with the
right.
capital gains.
That's exactly right.
And I think what Chris is talking about with capital gains, think about the stock market. The stock market is ignoring the fact that earnings are at peak, the economy is at peak, regulations are increasing, taxes are increasing, and valuations are near, you know, tech bubble highs. All these together.
Right.
You're pricing in perfection. Anything could knock this down.
Okay, see, wasn't that one of the knocks of getting the interest rate? If we're being redundant on this, I apologize. But getting the interest rate as low as it is right now, because they're saying, okay, now if we have a crisis, if we have a real crisis in the economy, there's nowhere to go.
Right. Yeah. Low interest rates, low inflation are very supportive of high valuations in the stock market.
Sure.
But we're already there.
Right.
And the Fed basically painted themselves into a corner. Now what do they do? They don't have any way out. They have lowered it to zero. They have no way out.
All right. This is both parties, too. I mean, because this is...
Powell was appointed by a Republican.
Yeah.
And Biden says Powell is going to stay.
Okay.
So, you know, you're right. It's both parties.
All right.
But what we learned is that they can't trade their own stocks anymore.
Yeah, we did learn that.
That's true.
Okay, let's move on. We got to take another break. Let's move on. We'll end it here after this. I don't want to make you guys late to your little party. So, let's talk about investing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the risks in the market and what the average Joe should do. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, gentlemen, we got traffic coming up in 10 seconds. Hold on. All right, we are back. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us this long. Appreciate it. Pavlos Panagopoulos, Cetera Advisor Networks, also Gene Goldman, Chief Investment Officer for Cetera, Chris Hennessy, Putman. I apologize. Business Advisor Group. I talk too quickly sometimes. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about the market. Let's talk about the risks that you see coming up, maybe for 2022, and where should people put their money?
Sure, that's a great question. So risks, we talked about much of them already, but let's go through some of the key risks. Number one, is this as good as it gets for, in terms of the economy, peak stimulus, peak earnings? Number two, inflation. We talked about inflation ad nauseum today, lots of inflation. Yeah. The third thing, China. China slowing down quickly is really going to hurt us, you know, because as the world's second largest economy, other issues in terms of, you know, demand, in terms of supply chains, those are all going to affect us. You add this on top of the fact that the stock market has a valuation, a forward valuation of around 21 or so, pretty high. Yeah. That means you're pricing in absolute perfection. The good news is we don't see a bear market, a big crashing bear market. We don't see one.
You don't see it?
We do not see it.
Okay.
We see a potential correction. We haven't had a correction yet. Corrections average on average about once every 8 to 9 months. We haven't seen a correction in a long, long time. We're due for one.
Why is that?
Basically, just there in the market, there's been this, you know, retail buyers have jumped in every time stocks have fallen down to their 50-day moving average. I know we're getting to the technicals.
That's okay.
50-day moving average. There's been a jumping in of buyers. Buyers have been buying. And it's really that whole phrase called TINA. There is no alternative. Stocks are pretty, nothing else other than stocks are great to buy right now. So you look at bonds. Bonds, from interest rate sensitivity, they're at record highs. You look at credit spreads in bonds, very, very low. It's super, super expensive. Real estate, commodity, these things have run up already. So investors are saying, what else do I buy? I buy stocks.
Oh, we're going to talk about real estate in the 5 o'clock hour. I got Cheryl Marlowe coming in. I think you know Cheryl.
Yes.
So what about real estate? When you look at that, I mean, is that a good investment? Obviously, there is a inventory shortage right now, and it's certainly a seller's market.
Right. I mean, you see the stories in Reddit in terms of all the different, like, you know, people buying, you know, crazy offers for houses. We don't think it's a bubble. We think there's really pockets of strength on the East Coast and the West Coast. We don't see a bubble, especially in the Midwest right now. We do worry with rising rates, that's going to put a crimp, and you're starting to see mortgage rates. Mortgage rates have started to rise. Mm-hmm. 3 of the last 4 weeks, mortgage applications have come down. So we do see some pressures coming.
Okay, so you're an average investor. Invest with you guys. Stay the course. What adjustments would you make?
Well, first of all, if you're with Publish, you're not average. You're above average.
Oh, well, of course you are.
Thank you, Gene. I'll pay you for that later, Gene. Thank you.
The question is, do you stay the course? And the answer is, it depends on your long-term investment objective.
Okay.
You know, you do need to sit down with an advisor, a financial advisor, to go through what are my goals, what are my risks, how should I be allocated? Because this is a very different investment environment than it was in the last 10 years. Last 10 years, basically everyone just bought growth. We were in a long expansion, slow growth environment, growth as well. We are in a different time now. Higher growth, more inflation equals different things doing better in this type of market.
So you need to talk. People need to talk.
You need to
talk. And talk to, again, if you haven't talked to your guy for a while, talk to him.
Right.
Exactly.
And you want to say diversified, but not diversified.
Okay. Exactly. Don't diversify.
TJ, I'm going to tell you, there's no correlation between tax rates going up and the stock market. All the way back to 1926, if I asked 100 people in the room, if taxes go up, bad for the market, they'd all raise their hands. Not the case.
Really?
No correlation.
Okay, that said, and I was going to end with this, with you, Chris. All right. What can people do to pay as little tax as possible? Where can they put their money?
Legally and not go to jail. Legally and not go to jail. Let's clarify that, TJ.
Well, I think they need a good tax person and a good tax advisor. There's a lot of people that prepare tax returns, but they're not good tax advisors.
Okay.
And make sure they take all the deductions that they're entitled to. And we were in an environment now where tax rates may be higher next year than they are this year. Push income into this year. Push deductions into next year. Very simple tax planning.
Okay, here's an off-the-wall question. We're going to end with this. I don't care who answers it. What about the cannabis market? We're going legal. We are legal.
As Cheech and Chong would have said, you quoted them earlier, it's up in smoke.
Funny. Very good. Look, it's legalized now in New Mexico. You know, retail begins in April. I mean, do you guys even talk about this?
I prefer scotch.
I'm from California. I live in California now. It is legal there. The problem is, you go into I don't know why I know this, but if you go to a pot shop, the taxes are 35%.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, yeah. But again, you know,
it's not federally legal, so there's other issues as well. So, TJ, don't put your money in pot right now. And I know you're thinking about it. Keep it in real estate. Cheryl Marlowe will be talking to you in a little bit.
Okay.
She'll set you straight in a few minutes.
We know you have the munchies for pot stocks, but hold off.
Okay. Yeah, hold on.
Don't get those munchies. Speaking of munchies, we're going to have dinner to go tonight with all of our clients, so we're looking forward to that.
All right, and you need to do your thing.
I got to do my thing. If anybody would like to reach us, you can reach us here locally in Albuquerque, 828-4068. You can go to our website, myfinancialsense.com, and learn more about our firm. And last thing I mentioned, securities investment advisory services are offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, and Cetera Advisor Networks is a member of the Securities Investors Protection Corporation. TJ, it was great being on with you, and again, thank you for allowing us to say our spiel.
It's always fun. Pablo Spanagopoulos, Gene Goldman.
Thank you, TJ.
Chris Hennessy, thank you so much for coming in. Go Browns.
Thank you, TJ.
Go Red Sox.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, traffic, 10 seconds, hold on.